and once again, welcome back to the Terrascope podcast. As always, I'm Kyle Hardcastle, the co-founder and global director of intelligence for Terrascope. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to say a big thank you to those of you who have been in contact to express how beneficial you have been finding our podcast so far. We really appreciate your feedback, and if there are any particular topics that you'd like us to explore in future episodes, please do send us your suggestions by email to contact@terrascope.com. So by request, in this episode, we'll be exploring postal threats and what that looks like, and we are joined by our subject matter expert, Martin Stanley. Martin currently works for Pitney Bowes, a company that, if you work in postrooms or mail handling, probably needs little introduction, as it provides a variety of services to the industry. Martin's experience and expertise include several years within postal and baggage screening, as well as unique insight into counterterrorism detection technology. So, Martin, great to have you here on the podcast.
Thanks for the introduction, Kyle.
Thank you.
Thanks for the invite.
No, my pleasure. I'm aware that my short introduction has probably not done you justice at all with all of your experience. So would you mind just sharing a little bit more with me and our listeners about your background, specifically within postal and baggage screening?
Yeah, so I've had a background in security prior to sort of being involved in the X-ray industry. And I joined one of the sort of leading X-ray security manufacturers in the UK 5 years ago, and worked with clients to sort of understand their needs with postal screening and what you might describe as front of house screening, where you're looking at the movement of people going into to buildings and to create secure environments. And that's really where my expertise lies. My experience has sort of led me to deal with a wide variety of clients, including quite a few that sort of sit within the critical infrastructure and some that sit on the peripheries of that, but for whatever reason have a security profile that requires them to think about screening people and screening mail coming into the business. I'm now with Pitney Bowes, and I'm a specialist now for Pitney Bowes, working on inbound solutions, which includes X-ray and also inbound tracking as well, that sort of sits within that inbound solution. So that's kind of my journey through this industry.
Fantastic. And I think it's fair to say you're in quite a unique position of experience and insight, especially for this podcast, which obviously, as I've mentioned, is specifically focusing on postal threats. So when we think of the terrorist threat, for many of our listeners, I'm sure that postal threats are probably not the first thing that comes to mind when we think about terrorism. But actually, they are a fairly regular occurrence. We've identified that through our work here at Terrascope, and I'm sure through your everyday work as well, and the clients you work with, that it is a fairly regular occurrence that we have to deal with postal threat incidents all of the time. So from your perspective and your experience, what are the different types of threat that may come through the postal system?
Well, just to reiterate what you're saying there, Kyle. Yeah, one of the things that was mentioned to me when I started to sort of work within the postal screening industry is that really a thing? People would often say, are postal threats really a thing? And yes, they are. Admittedly, not every business in the UK needs to sort of focus too much on postal threats, but certainly there are some industries out there. And to answer your question, yes, that would include things like explosive devices, incendiaries. That would include improvised items that people have put together that might be sort of mechanical in nature. For instance, things like mouse traps, sharps and blades, and also biological and chemical threats. So there's a broad spectrum of ways that people have decided to send threats, and a fairly broad spectrum of clients as well that probably sit within that space, where the security profile means that they're attracting the wrong kind of attention.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned biological and chemical threats there, and quite often within the security industry and also within the media, these sorts of incidents are often referred to as white powder incidents. And,
that's correct. Yeah.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, where that kind of terminology has come from, it could be any number of different sort of biological, chemical agents that are sent in substances. But it commonly refers to the potential presence of anthrax. And that primarily came to the fore in 2001 when there was an incident over in the United States where letters laced with anthrax were sent to various different locations, news and media offices and senators and other political officials out in the US. And it was actually anthrax and ultimately resulted in the death of 5 people. And since that time, there have been a number of genuine and also so-called hoaxed powder-related incidents that we have identified here at Terrascope in various different countries. So we've briefly touched on it, kind of got an idea of the sort of items that might be sent in the post. You've mentioned chemical, biological, mechanical sort of things, sharps and blades, but also moving to explosives and improvised sort of devices. But what sort of locations, in your experience, might be the target of this sort of hostile intent and activity?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I think our tendency is to try and almost create verticals in our mind where you would say, well, okay, well, you know, if it's a government site, it really must have that threat present. Or if it's a, you know, a pharmaceutical site. And that really isn't the case. I think probably what you probably need to do if you're trying to understand the risk is work backwards from the type of organization that you are part of and the general perception of the public. So if you imagine, obviously, local and central government have like a political profile, and that quite often touches on religious topics, it will quite often mean that decisions are made that don't suit certain people. So you might say that, you know, government, central government and local government sites are almost probably the, you know, the atypical type of organization that would attract that type of thing. But on the peripheries of that, there are different businesses, but for whatever reason, they may have a profile, they may not have a religious profile, but for whatever reason, the profile of their business is attracting the wrong kind of attention. Typically, that can be very high profile companies and organizations. Can be football clubs who have tribal tendencies, where obviously you've got neighbouring clubs that have that dislike for each other. You look at Manchester United, Manchester City, there's no love lost between those two sets of fans. Similarly in Liverpool, in Glasgow, two neighbouring teams, all sorts of industries that will attract the wrong kind of attention. So rather than thinking of the type of industry, it's probably better to think about the type of attention that your organisation is attracting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly does. So as you say, there's those sort of core, obvious locations, businesses, government agencies and things which traditionally have always been a potential target of postal-related threats. But also, as you say, there's that wider sort of picture to consider as well with regards to smaller, medium-sized businesses, depending on who they are, what their affiliations are, and what they do on a daily basis. And we've seen that a lot within our work, again, at Terrascope. So for us, for our Terrascope app, where we are monitoring potential and confirmed terrorist-related activity and incidents across the globe, and we send out fast-time notification and analysis of those incidents to those users of our app and our web-based platform. Since June 2022, looking at some of the statistics I've got here, at Terrascope, we've actually identified 52 postal-related incidents that we've notified our users of, and they have included general suspicious items, the sort of points and blades that you've mentioned, but also explosives and powders as well. So everything we've been saying so far is reflected in real-world incidents that we've been identifying and reporting on. And within those incidents, we've also identified that, rightly so, as you've said, is that there's also a variety of different locations and people, individuals that have been the target of those incidents. So we've got government officials, government buildings, including embassies and courtrooms. There's also been schools involved in that as well, and also private businesses. So it's quite a broad range of potential targets for the postal threat, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Kyle. I think that sometimes where organisations become unstuck is when they're trying to understand the risk. Is first of all, we'll ask the question, well, what type of organisation are we? And even if you are a government organisation, and government as a whole have, you know, a unique security profile, there are some government buildings where they're not critical to the infrastructure. There's not a lot of people working out of there, and the potential impact would be probably quite low. And there's all sorts of government buildings where the opposite is true, where the impact would be extremely high if there was a postal attack. So quite often where clients become unstuck is, number one, understanding the likelihood. The likelihood of an attack through the post is probably going to be quite low. It's not always, even though you're talking about 56 attacks, scheme of things, it is quite low in terms of frequency. But when you look at the impacts and the consequence of a postal attack, in most cases, it's very high. And this is where sort of having a really good understanding of the impact as well as the actual likelihood is quite important. Quite often where clients get unstuck is actually trying to find that information. So trying to understand the frequency of postal attacks is quite a job. It's, as we've mentioned before, what you've done with Terrascope is you've compiled lots of useful information, which is hidden, usually quite low on the agenda, on lots of news feeds. And if it was back in the old days of reading the newspaper, quite often it would be page 3 at the bottom of the page somewhere. And we're in danger of having too much noise in the media for people who want the information to be able to find it. So, you know, front page is always Harry and Meghan, isn't it, at the moment? This type of thing where you need to understand the frequency and types of organisations. It's quite useful for security people to understand and have that in their news feed. So, yeah, this is where I found Terrascope to be quite useful.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, it's good to hear that because that is what our aim is, essentially. And certainly from a postal threat perspective, yeah, we are picking up on many, many incidents that maybe at best meet local news outlets' attention very, very briefly. But if people are sort of relying on mainstream media to get a clear picture of the sort of activity that is taking place with hazardous substances or harmful items being sent in the post, very, very difficult to do it in any other way if you are solely relying on news outlets and things like that. Within the incidents that we've identified, quite a lot of them, the majority of them, have actually turned out to not be a viable explosive device, even though it has, for all intents and purposes, it has been specifically created to look like one. Yeah. And also incidents where powdered substances have been sent in the post, sometimes with a threatening letter, is also quite common to kind of accompany it. However, right, following testing, that substance transpires to not be harmful. It could be baking soda or washing powder or something like that. Yeah. But one of the things we've noticed, and you briefly mentioned it on there, which is why I kind of want to come back round to it, is actually one of the significant considerations of postal incidents for any individual business is the impact that it has. And even if an item turns out to not be harmful or not be hazardous, the ramifications and the impact that that can have on a business is just as significant if it was actually a viable explosive or harmful substance. Yeah. Because a lot of the incidents we identify and we've monitored that have transpired to not be something of concern, that location has still had significant disruption. It's still been evacuated, which has caused costs in reduction of business and things of that nature. And it's also had a significant impact on fear generation and causing terror within both employees and people maybe that are visiting those sort of locations. So would you agree that sort of impact is maybe one of the significant focuses with maybe motivations behind those that do send items within the post?
Yeah, I mean, there's two points there, Kyle. And, you know, you mentioned earlier on there where, you know, there's different types of threats that are sent. And it's probably good to imagine that if you look at the way that the threats are put together, if you were to make an explosive device, for instance, in order to use that as a mail bomb threat, number one, you need to have the actual materials to do that. Then you need to have the expertise in order to put that together. And you need to have a good level of commitment in order to actually follow through with that. Partly because you've got the off chance of blowing yourself up if you're making things from explosives and making that type of device. And then you look at the opposite end of the scale, where you've got hoax devices or hoax powders and so on. These are much, much more frequent. And the reason being is that it really does not take any skill, if you like, a very little in terms of commitment, for you to put some flour or baking powder in an envelope. But the impact of that will always be significant. If white powder turns up in a mailroom, and that should be reported, the actual consequence to that and the back end of that is more than likely a hazmat team would need to analyse that. That would mean people being quarantined. If it was a dangerous substance, there would more than likely be sort of disrobing and decontamination being put into place. And the consequence is quite often disproportionate to the actual threat. So in other words, you don't really need to put too much risk to yourself to create a really difficult situation for the recipient. Hence the reason why powder is so frequent. In actual fact, explosive devices are fairly infrequent in the UK, thankfully. And we touched upon the anthrax incident. The consequence of that is that the cleanup alone has been estimated at somewhere between 150 and $3 million for the cleanup operation to make sure that these areas were decontaminated. That's obviously a viable threat, but it is usually taken very seriously. And in terms of consequence, that would almost definitely mean that an organization would be closed down, quarantined, whatever business operation was going on would halt. And potentially, you know, even if it wasn't viable, people would be very distressed. So just wanted to sort of cover that, because there's a bit of a discrepancy between the actual threat and the consequence that follows behind it.
Yeah, I think that's really useful. And sometimes we can quite often hear about an incident that's taken place and go, oh, it turned out to be nothing. But actually, we need to look beyond the actual item that was sent within the post and see the consequences and impact that actual incident had in its wider context. And as you say, you know, there's a variety of different motivations that might cause someone to send this in the post. So for us at Terrorscope, obviously, yeah, we are primarily interested in the terrorist threat. That is our main focus. But certainly from the instance that we've kind of looked at, it could be terrorism, it could be another form of political activism, or it could even be, in some of our instance, a disgruntled employee who now decided to target their place of work. And the financial and ramifications and disruption that, you know, as you say, simply putting a harmless white powder in an envelope with a threat and sending it to a location can cause. So I think for us next, then, that kind of leads on to, for especially our listeners who work within security professions, what can we do about this then? What are our options? And from our kind of perspective at Terrorscope, when we report on incidents that do take place, as well as trying to be a fast time notification of potential confirmed terrorist attacks, we also like to analyse those incidents to try to pull out learning that people in security professionals can apply to their own sort of security operations. So in your kind of experience, are there any suspicious signs or indicators that those handling mail should be aware of when it comes to identifying potentially confirming items of post, especially those that work within mail handling rooms? I imagine they get loads of letters, packages, parcels a day. What are the sort of things that maybe they should be looking out for that might give them that early indication that this is not a normal bit of post and might be something of concern?
Well, yeah, just to address your first point there, Kyle. Yeah, in terms of the actual risk, because you were talking about, you know, terrorism and malicious attacks. First of all, in order to understand the actual risk, you do need to consider that some attacks might not just be categorised as terrorist attacks. Terrorism is usually categorised as either political or religious in motivation. So if you look at information that you might find on databases like the Global Terrorism Database, there won't be an awful lot of evidence there, because the vast majority of postal attacks are actually probably categorized as criminal / malicious attacks from people who are either disgruntled or have some sort of ideology that's based on perhaps an activist group that they might be part of. Sometimes that might be ecological protesters, it can be animal rights protesters, it can sit in lots of different areas. So motivation is quite often difficult to understand. In terms of what you can do when you, if you're looking to make sure that your postroom staff or your mailroom staff are up to speed, is without X-ray, you are going to have a massive disadvantage because there'll be lots of devices that really won't have any exterior signs that indicate that there's something dangerous in there. Unfortunately, that is the case. There are some visual things that you can pick up on. If you're not going to put X-ray in place, or it's not something that's viable on your site, there's some really good training on the CPNI website. So if you look at CPNI, which is Centre for the Protection of National Infrastructure, and look up Mail Screening Matters, there's some really good content there, which is fairly general advice for pre-scanning, or if you're not going to scan at all, i.e. if you're going to be using your senses, your touch and your visual senses and so on. Typically, the things that can be visual indicators, obviously to look at who the parcel or letter is addressed to. Typically, complaints department tend to have a higher frequency. Higher level members of the board or people who might be high profile within the business may have a particular security profile that sits in its own category, if you like, within the organisation. So you look at, say, a local government site, the councillors and the people who are the high profile people will possibly be the most likely to receive threats, whereas some of the departments have very little threat attached to them at all. So who is it addressed to? Is there anything unusual about the parcel? Quite often, powders and biological threats will stain an envelope. If it's a powder base or a sort of biological threat, you may see deposits in the corners, which you can feel deposits in the corner of the envelopes where may not be particularly visible, but you can actually feel it. If you're looking at parcels, small holes in the parcel, obviously things like wires sticking out the parcel, which would be an immediate one, which I'm pretty sure everybody would be quite concerned about. But for a full list of these, probably the best place I could send you is CPNI, Mail Screening Matters. There's some really good downloadable content there. So you can actually do a proper training session with your mailroom staff. However, I'm going to caveat that by saying, if you are a site which has a security profile that gives you some concern, realistically, X-ray is the only way that you're going to be able to see inside a parcel. There's plenty of threats that don't have any sort of indications on the exterior of the parcel, which would lead you to believe that there's something dangerous in there. As a really effective way of understanding whether something is dangerous, really you need to see inside it.
For the benefit of our listeners, I'll actually include the web link to that CPNI website that you've mentioned within the description for this episode so people can find that quite easily. So yeah, so there is that kind of element of we need to be aware of the visual things that we can look out for, those sort of signs that you've spoken about. But quite clearly from there is that we do ideally need some form of technical assistance. And you mentioned a couple of times there about the use of X-ray machines and things like that.
It's really important that if you are deploying X-ray equipment or if you have any sort of screening process, if it's a visual one or if you're just getting people to sort of be more vigilant, to sort of map out a workflow. So even if you, for instance, even if you have an X-ray machine, it's worthwhile thinking about, you know, how are you going to deploy that unit? How are you going to use that as in terms of a workflow? So quite often what happens is mail will come into an organization and somebody will empty it out on a table from a sack or from a crate. They're a rough sort where they'll start to start make the way through that incoming mail. It's always a good idea to start early with all of your senses. So even if you've got X-ray, that doesn't mean you need to not take any care in the processes before that. So it's always good to start your vigilance early. So in other words, anything that goes into an X-ray scanner, you know, should really, somebody should be looking at it and kind of understanding, you know, what's going in there. Is there anything immediately that is making me concerned? An X-ray can be used in different ways as well. So in other words, you don't necessarily need to break down a postal sac in order to scan it. In some cases, you can get a whole postal sac through an X-ray scanner, and it will give you some indication of if there's any solid items in there before you've even touched the contents of the sac. So quite often when I'm working with clients, I'll recommend a workflow that includes a pre-scan where you scan the sac or the crate before you actually then do a rough sort, and then secondary scan. That obviously depends on what's reasonable and practicable for the site. But the message is that, you know, even if you have X-ray, don't just use X-ray. Get you guys to use their eyes, the sense of touch, and keep their eyes open at every stage of the screening process.
So with X-ray technology then for mailrooms, and I'm sure there's been lots of developments over the years because X-ray is a technology that's been around for a long time. Is it just suitable for screening and looking for component parts of ID, so like metal parts and things like that, or is it also effective for biological powders and those sorts of substances?
That's a great question, Kyle. And one of the big misconceptions that's out there is that quite often clients will buy X-ray equipment without really understanding the tolerances of what it's going to detect and the detection capabilities. The answer is that yes, there are machines that have capabilities that have a broad range of screening capability. So, for instance, the Pitney Bowes TR15 scanner has a really broad range of detection capability. So you will see solid items in there. So that might be blades or sharps or even pins and things that are quite delicate and small. That could go up to detonators or explosive material. And you can even see quite small amounts of powder with that using a special filter that they have to enhance the image. But not all machines have that capability. So quite often I'll go into a post room and there might be a conveyor scanner there, which has excellent capability in detecting solid items, but might not have the same capability in detecting small amounts of powder. So in terms of the technology, probably the best thing to do is if you're thinking about X-ray equipment, is just have a chat to somebody who will help you to understand what the capabilities of the different machines are and how that matches what you want to detect. In other words, don't assume that every X-ray machine will detect everything. Some are much better than others. Equally, if you do have X-ray equipment on site, and actually put test pieces through there just to check the tolerances. So one of the things I would recommend is take an envelope and then take a teaspoon of flour, a flat teaspoon, which will probably be about 6 or 7 grams of powder. Pop that in the envelope, pop it inside your X-ray machine. If you can't see it, well, then that probably means that your operators are not going to be able to be effective in detecting powder. Likewise, there are official test pieces that you can use, which will help you to understand whether your machine is calibrated correctly. So if you're interested in that, what we can do is post a link to a place where you can actually get hold of test pieces. Quite often they are used as a part of course with lots of organisations to ensure that machines are calibrated properly. But from a postal point of view, probably the best one, which is really simple, take a flat teaspoon of powder, pop it in an envelope, pop that through your X-ray machine. Does it actually detect it? If not, that would probably be a good conversation piece with myself or somebody within the industry that will guide you to the right technology that will do that.
So a crucial kind of message there is not all scanning devices or X-ray machines are the same, and having that understanding of the capabilities of the equipment that you already have, if you already have equipment in place, and what it is capable or not capable of detecting, is really kind of crucial for you to understand what your detection capabilities are.
Yes, so, exactly, yeah.
So as I say, like with the instance we cover and monitor at Terscope, we always like to pull out learning. And there was in preparation for this podcast, there was one particular very recent, so it's only happened a couple of days ago on the 25th of January, which I kind of think really pulls together as a good example of some of the things that we've been talking about. As I mentioned, this was the 25th of January. It was actually based in Spain, where a prison officer was going through some mail that had been sent to their location. And on seeing one particular envelope, he started to become a little bit concerned with it. Specifically, the intelligence information we've identified is that that member of prison staff looked at that item. He looked at the sender that that item's come from and didn't recognize it as being one of their usual origins of where they would get mail from, which started to kind of raise their suspicion a little bit. They then looked at that more closely and noticed that the postmark on that item didn't actually correspond to the return address as well that had been put on that. So there were some inconsistencies around the stamping and the postmarks on that package. So essentially that kind of led them to become concerned. So at this stage, it's that level of visual assessment of that item. As a result of that concern, they've then decided to use a X-ray scanner and screening device to take a closer look at what could potentially be in that envelope, because they weren't happy at that stage to open it. And that essentially then identified clearly the presence of wires and also what was believed to be an explosive substance inside. That then resulted in official police explosive disposal specialists coming down, and ultimately a controlled explosion was conducted on that envelope. I think that's a really good example of how actually it is effective, everything that we've been talking about, right from having that baseline foundation of awareness about some of the characteristics about a postal item that may raise concern for us, and then about the technology that we can use to verify or pacify that concern that we have with regards to that item. But also, I think within that, response plans and having a robust and tested response plan is really, really important. Yeah. And absolutely, that applies to any sort of security incident we have to deal with, whether it's a suspicious postal item, suspicious bag left at a location, or a bomb threat that may come through via the telephone. We always need to, as security professionals, make sure we know what we're going to do and how we're going to effectively respond to any potential security threat. And part of that, again, I want to look at one of the incidents that we've highlighted within Terrascope and monitored. And as with all of our podcasts, we're not in the job of trying to point out people's mistakes or trying to criticize people for how they responded to an incident. But we do like to look at incidents to see whether there is any learning we can pull out and anything that we could do better. So this particular incident happened in New York in the United States on the 8th of November. And it was a situation where a package containing two bags with white powdered substance was sent to a Jewish school within the New York State area. So they've received this envelope, they've opened it up, and they've identified a pound within that postal item. As a result of that, people at the school have then repackaged the envelope and taken it to the local police station because of their concerns. And ultimately, that resulted in a mass evacuation of the police station, which caused significant disruption, and also hazmat specialists having to come down to that location to test that substance and subsequently decide whether it was harmful or not. So for me, in that particular incident, one of the things we highlighted was obviously, yes, they've got a genuine concern. They've received that powdered substance in the post, but maybe repackaging it and taking it to your local police station and transporting it to a different location maybe wasn't the best action to take. Definitely considering the threat there. And I was just wondering to get your sort of perspective on that. When we are thinking about our response plans to postal related incidents, what are the sort of things that we should be thinking about if we are responsible for how we react to once a postal threat's been identified?
Yeah, if you were to look at the way that postrooms respond when there's incidents that occur, creates all sorts of problems. So when you look at explosive devices would generally mean that you would evacuate. And quite often clients will have that down to a T because they will have evacuated prior to that, well, you know, with things like fire drills and so on. But quite often clients haven't done a drill that relate specifically to a post-room attack. So post-room attacks are different. And one reason is that obviously your muster points that you would normally muster to in a fire evacuation may be compromised. So if you've got something that's in line of sight of your post room, that's probably not a good idea to muster to a location that could be exposed to glass and fragments from an explosion. However, the big one is most people don't consider what they would do in the event of a powder incident. Powder attacks are different in as much as the action that you would take would almost definitely be that you would quarantine, and you would need to ensure that your staff are able to stay secure. People don't enter the mail room or the place where the contamination is, and also that the staff don't leave and then spread contamination around. Quite important that air conditioning is isolated. So good question. Do you have an isolation switch in your post room that would enable your staff to actually isolate the aircon? The second point that I wanted to make is the communication piece is really important. The Pitney Bowes TR-15 unit, it has an integration with CallMy, which is a critical event management communication software package. That means that the image on the screen that the operator sees can actually be shared with a first responder. So if your head of security isn't in the post room, which they generally probably won't be, it means that that image can be shared instantly and the decision can be made remotely, very quickly. Ordinarily, without that connection, what would happen is somebody would probably need to go into the post room to verify that threat before you would then either ring the bomb squad or ring, you know, for a hazmat team to come and attend. So the communication piece is really important. Those who are looking to attain an ISO 22301, which is your business continuity management ISO, there's a whole section in there that talks about effective communication in the event of a serious incident. And that's a very good example that contextualizes that whole piece. The Pitney Bowes units also come with powder detection, so it gives you a broad range of detection, but also really importantly, it gives you that connection where you can, if you choose to connect it up and have it connected and integrated with CallMy, would provide a really effective means of escalation so that your decision makers can have the right information straight away.
Thanks, Martin. Yeah, I think that really, you know, hits home and really highlights that when we're considering postal threats, there's a variety of different things we need to be thinking about. Yes, what should we be looking out for? What technology can help us with either verifying or detecting suspicious items as well? But also sitting behind all of that is, what is our response plan? How are we going to deal with incidents effectively if we do identify a security threat in the post? And also, depending on what that threat is, our response may need to be different. So if it is a suspect explosive device or if it is a powder, that will have an impact on the evacuation plans and the actions we take.
If anybody's listening and they're looking to sort of put in place, you know, a more robust screening process, whether that involves X-ray or not, I offer free consultation to clients. So if you're looking to build resilience in the post room, what I could potentially help you to do is to look at that process from start to finish. So that would include, you know, what we've already discussed about pre-screening, about workflows, about what you want to detect, about, you know, the types of machines that will offer the level of detection that you're particularly looking for. Obviously, it's really important that clients are looking to mitigate a particular threat. Well, then that mitigation should really be effective, shouldn't it? And that's where I can help. So if you are looking for a second pair of eyes, by all means, reach out to me and we'll obviously be able to help you make sense of that situation and give you some free advice.
That's perfect. And I know that many of our listeners who do have postal rooms or just deal with post on a regular basis, I'm sure will be very, very interested in getting in contact with you. So what we'll do is also on the Terrascope podcast episode description for this particular episode, if you're happy, Martin, I'll also include your email address on there so that people can reach out to you directly.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, Kyle.
Fantastic. Well, Martin, thank you so much for giving up your time. Really interesting topic. And as I say, one that sometimes gets neglected and goes under the radar when we start to think about the terrorist threat. So what we do for all of our guests that come on the podcast is we like to, as a bit of a thank you for giving up your time and sharing your expertise, we like to make a charitable donation to a charity of your choice. So is there a particular charity that's close to your heart that you would like us to make a donation to on your behalf?
Thank you for that. For me, it's Alzheimer's Society. I'm very keen to support those families who, for whatever reason, have family members who are suffering from Alzheimer's. I think they do some great work and they'd be very worthy of a donation. So thank you very much for that.
No problem at all. That'd be our absolute pleasure. So thank you again, Martin, for giving up your time. And for our listeners, we'll be catching up with you soon for another episode. But as I mentioned at the start, if you do have any suggestions or any particular terrorism or counterterrorism related topics that you'd like us to cover on the Terrascope podcast, please do get in contact with us by email to contact@terrascope.com. So lastly, thank you again, Martin.
Thanks, Kyle.